get up each morning and dust off my wits, open the paper and read the obits. If I'm not in there, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a quick breakfast and go back to bed. And how do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go just got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been. How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go just got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been.
Newsbreak from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush, breaking with decades of U.S. policy and outraging Palestinians, said Israel could keep part of the West Bank in a future peace deal that now appears more distant than ever. Bush coupled what Israel hailed as a historic statement on Wednesday with an endorsement of Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's unilateral Gaza pullout plan and a negation of any right to return of Palestinian refugees to what is now Israel. Sharon will fly home on Thursday armed with what he came to Washington for, U.S. guarantees he can flaunt in the face of opponents of his proposal to uproot all Gaza settlements and four of the 120 in the West Bank. Palestinian Prime Minister Ahmed Kouri immediately denounced the statement as unacceptable. Faced with rising violence in Iraq, the U.S. military plans to keep more than 20,000 troops from the 1st Armored Division and 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment there this summer beyond their promised year-long tours, defense officials said on Wednesday. The officials, who asked not to be identified, said final plans were being considered by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld based on a request from Army General John Abizaid, head of the U.S. Central Command with responsibility for Iraq. All U.S. troops in Iraq have been sent there under a promise to be brought home after a year. Democrat John Kerry faulted George W. Bush for a unilateral approach toward Iraq that has created greater dangers for the U.S. military, but the presidential candidate was heckled Wednesday for failing to back the immediate withdrawal of American forces. Kerry backed the 2002 congressional resolution authorizing the president to use force in Iraq, but since then has been harshly critical of Bush's foreign policy. During a question-and-answer session, a retired college professor accused Kerry of backing an imperialist policy in Iraq. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Veterinarians in Argentina said they treated a circus elephant for stress on Wednesday, saying the animal appeared depressed after spending several days away from her circus troupe. The elephant, named Mesri, is a leading attraction in a traveling show making appearances in the Argentine interior. Last week, Mesri was taken from the circus grounds after local authorities said a city ordinance prevented such animals from participating in public shows. Mesri soon showed signs of distress, authorities said, after being transported to El Recreo, a town 300 miles north of Buenos Aires. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The offshoring of U.S. jobs is good for you. We know this is so because the powers that be keep telling us so. And they've never been wrong, have they? The latest assertion of offshoring absolutism comes from two peers of the economic establishment. First, let's hear from John Snow, the former CEO and corporate downsizer who is now George W.'s Treasury Secretary. Asked about the issue of corporations shipping out America's middle-class jobs, Snow was downright cheerful about the move. It's one aspect of trade, he said, and there can't be any doubt about the fact that trade makes the economy stronger. Can't be any doubt, John? You might check with some displaced workers about that. But Snow is way too busy cheerleading to talk to workers. You can outsource a lot of activities and get them done as well or better at a lower cost, he marveled. Excuse me, but perhaps it's time to outsource his activities. Then comes super techie Mark Andreessen to lecture us rubes. He's the former honcho of Netscape, who now runs an outfit that makes software to help CEOs offshore jobs. It's a hugely, hugely positive trend. Absolutely positive, he raves. Absolutely, Mark? One doesn't get the feeling that he's talked to many of the displaced either. But he's also way too busy for that, since he's now spreading his theoretical absolutism through a one-man media campaign to extol the joys of offshoring. By sending our jobs abroad, he says, those foreign workers will be able to buy Apple computers, Nike shoes, and other goodies from U.S. corporations. This is Jim Hightower saying, excuse me, Mark, but one, those workers are not being paid that well, and two, while those corporations have American names, they make their products abroad too. Sorry to be so untheoretical here, but the grubby bottom line of offshoring is that big global investors get richer and the middle class gets stooped.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks for joining us today. It's tax day, April 15th. It is the dreaded tax day. And it's one of the things that I think is really, really interesting about this is the way that, particularly over the last 10 or 15 years, conservatives have been able to fairly successfully spin this thing around from, we have this thing called a democracy here, and we have these things called the commons, like, you know, our roads and our schools for that matter, our government, which makes business possible, you know, provides a banking system, provides an infrastructure, a court system that's stable, protects our nation. And the other commons, we want our air to be clean, we want our water to be pure, we'd like to make sure that our food is safe, we'd like to know that our drugs are not going to harm us. But we don't want to pay for it. And in fact, it's like men with guns. It's an evil thing, right? To pay for the stuff that we use every day. Every day we drive to work on the public way. As all across America, people are driving on public streets, listening to right-wing talk show hosts talk about, it's your money. Government shouldn't take any of it. It's your money. No, there's this social contract. We all agreed to participate in this. And anytime you decide, I don't want to agree in the social contract anymore, you can leave. It's no problem. One of the great things about the United States. Anyway, to talk about this, and not specifically this issue, and that's my particular rant on it, but what is happening
with regard to our taxes and the middle class in the United States and how things are changing. I'm very pleased to have on our program Chuck Collins. Chuck has been with us. Last time I think Chuck was on was when your book had come out, Wealth in Our Commonwealth. Was that right, Chuck?
That's right. Yeah, good to be with you, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, great to have you back. Yes, thank you. Chuck is the co-author of Wealth in Our Commonwealth with Bill Gates Sr., as I recall. And you're the associate director and co-founder of United for a Fair Economy and also the author of Economic Apartheid in America. And you have some fascinating observations about what's going on in the United States with regard to taxes. And let me just pass it over to you. What's the big picture here, Chuck?
I guess the big picture I would say is that the tax burden is shifting. And for many of us who supposedly got a federal, you know, tax cut, President Bush sent my family $400 last summer because I have an 8-year-old daughter, so I got my tax cut. But for many of us, those were not really tax cuts; those were tax shifts. That while we may have saved some money at the federal level, that we're actually paying the bill in some other places at our state and local taxes. And that the real tax breaks have gone to the big corporations and the very, very wealthy. So we've seen a longer-term trend over 2-3 decades of a shift in the tax burden, and that's only accelerated really in the last couple of years.
Yeah, this all really began with the so-called Reagan Revolution, conservative economics, which really boils down to let's create a society that works to the benefit of the very wealthy and the powerful and screw the middle class. We don't need no stinking middle class. I can tell you, Chuck, one of the things that I noticed, because I own 2.5 shares of Marriott stock back years ago, they were offering a 10% discount on their hotels to stockholders, so I bought one share for like, you know, $20 or something. And over the decade and a half, it has split twice, and it's done all kinds of things. And I get these 7-cent checks every, I think every 6 months. And so I'm getting stock dividends. And the guy that works with us on our taxes, he says, you know, if most of your income was coming from stock dividends, you would only be paying 15% income tax, period, and you would not be paying any workman's payroll taxes. And this, thanks to George Bush, you know, he's a great Republican. He thought this was a marvelous thing. And this doesn't get talked about a lot. I don't think that the average working person in America realizes that people who make their living sitting on their butts waiting for a check to come from Marriott or whatever corporation they own stock in are paying lower taxes than the guys who are repairing the streets out in front.
Well, you know, you hear these politicians talking about the virtues of hard work, but the tax system is doing what you're saying. It's shifting the burden off of income from stocks and bonds and investments and onto wages. And that's a 20-year shift. And actually, I heard Warren Buffett say now he pays a lower effective rate than his secretary,
right?
Because his income comes from investments and hers comes from wages.
That's right. Yeah,
it's wrong.
It's not just wrong. If we as a fundamental tenet of living in America decide that it's a good thing for the United States. I mean, but not just setting aside even the moral argument in favor of it, that it's a good thing to have a strong middle class because the quality of life improves, even for the rich. They don't have to, you know, if you've got a strong middle class, you don't have to walk down the street worrying that somebody's going to mug you. You don't have, you know, kids in the streets begging. You don't have lepers clinging on you and like you do in much of the world. I mean, I've been there. I've seen these things. And so if we say, even for the most selfish of reasons, we'd like to have a strong middle class. We don't want an internal terrorism, you know, in those countries where the middle class is collapsing. That's the, you know, ferments and foments terrorism. We would like to have a strong middle class. And yet the conservative economic agenda of the last 20 years, largely 24 years here since Reagan, basically, has strongly worked against this. You note a 17% decline in the share of revenue from progressive taxes and a 135% increase in the share of revenue from regressive taxes. Let's just define terms here. What's the difference between a progressive tax and a regressive tax?
Well, progressive tax is based on your capacity to pay. So the higher up your income goes, or the higher up your wealth, the higher percentage you would pay. And a regressive tax would be like many of our states, where the lower income you are, the higher percentage of your income you pay. And one of the trends is, as we have a progressive federal tax system because we have a progressive income tax and we still have a capital gains tax and a inheritance tax, all that is obviously under assault and the progressive federal system is getting less progressive. But when we cut and reduce taxes at the federal level and shift them onto states and localities, we're also shifting who pays because we're taking the burden off the wealthy and shifting it onto local tax systems, which are more regressive. And so low and middle income people are picking up the slack.
Yeah, largely, hugely. 1-866-888-9894 is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the line with Chuck Collins or have comments on this. Chuck, from taxes to on wealth to taxes on work, you point out a tax on unearned income between 31 and 91%, but a tax hike, now what is this, of inheritance or investment of between 31 and 79%, but a tax hike of work income of 25% since 1980. This is what you were just talking about, right?
Right, yeah. So for people who pay, whose incomes come from wages, they're seeing their payroll taxes going up and their income taxes staying steady or going up. So that's the thing. If you work for wages, you not only are paying more, but the likelihood is you'll probably get audited more because you can't really play much. You can't really game the wage system. You know, the government's taking out your withholding. It knows where your interest is. But when you get to be a corporation or a very wealthy person and your wealth and income comes from, you know, assets and investments, we're seeing a lot more gaming of the system, a lot more tax shelters and ways of hiding income. And that's not where the auditing resources are going. So we're not only seeing a disparity in who pays, we're seeing where the enforcement is now falling.
Yeah. I want to get to the corporate side of this, too. We've got a call here, 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Brian in Grand Rapids, is on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air with Chuck Collins.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, as far as you were saying about the virtues of hard work, that same thing happens when we go to collect our Social Security. If we want to supplement our Social Security income with... by getting a job and we make too much money, we can lose that Social Security income, whereas if you have investment income coming in, it won't affect it.
Yeah, now you've got the former Secretary of either Commerce or Treasury, Paul O'Neill, has had come out when he was, what was he, Secretary or Commerce
Secretary
or Treasury?
Treasury, yeah.
That's what I thought. And he came out, and in fact, we interviewed him. He or his office, he had been quoted in The Economist while he was Secretary of Commerce as saying that he thought that there should be an absolute end to Social Security in the United States, and that the Bush administration backed him up on that. And we contacted his office, and they said, yes, he actually said that, and we expected more blowback. We expected the American press to pick it up. The American press didn't pick it up. It was just published by The Economist in England. I thought that was fascinating. But, Brian, you're spot on right. And Social Security, which used to be actually a reasonable retirement, has been dramatically eroded by inflation over the years and not supplemented on the one hand. On the other hand, you've got the cons who want to destroy Social Security running around saying, this thing is going to go bankrupt any day now. But the Social Security taxes are only paid on the first, what is it, Chuck, 87,000? And, Brian, thanks for the call. I'm going to let you go here. Did you have another point there you wanted to add? Okay.
Well, I just found out, too, that the changes to the Social Security now, the benchmark for your benefit is based on your earnings from your 60th year.
Oh, my.
Of your life. So if you're in a business where you can have a lot of W-2 income that year, where you can control the amount of income you show, then you can really maximize that benefit. But if you're a regular person that's working the same all their life, then you're not going to be able to maximize that as much.
Yeah, it's squirrely. It's absolutely squirrely. Brian, thank you very much. The conservatives are saying this thing is going to go broke, but the fact, Chuck, is that it's the first 81,700, 87,100, what is the amount of our income that we pay into Social Security? And then after that, if you make $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year, or as we discovered here today, the average CEO in America makes $155,769 a week, then you pay no Social Security tax on that after that first 80-some-odd thousand. Right?
Right, they're done paying into the Social Security fund about noon on January 2nd, while the average nurse or worker is paying their whole year. That's one of the injustices.
It's not just an injustice. It's crazy. And this is the sort of thing where if we were to just take off the cap from Social Security,
yeah,
we could actually turn the entire Social Security Trust Fund not into something just solvent, but actually provide people with a decent retirement. We're talking with Chuck Collins, United for a Fair Economy. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New research conducted by the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University confirms what many workers already know. They're getting the short end of the stick. Since the end of 2001, American workers have had the lowest share of the national income on record, meaning they're producing more and getting less. Corporate profits got a larger percent share of the wealth from increased production. 41% went to corporations, with labor receiving only 38%.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.TuneTrackerSystems.com. www.TuneTrackerSystems.com.
You're You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy.
That's the new fashionable thing. It's interesting, the press coverage that we got around the first of the year about the economy is picking up at the two extremes. We're seeing increases in stores like Tiffany's, and we're seeing increases in purchasing at stores like Walmart. But everybody in the middle is getting squeezed, and that's Chuck Collins, that's what you're documenting. What's the website for United for a Fair Economy?
Faireconomy.org.
Great, okay. And, Chuck, the taxes... Let's talk about corporate taxes for a minute here. What were the tax rates like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and what are they like now? What percentage of the commons that we all collectively share and that corporations certainly get the blessings of are they paying for?
Well, it's interesting that corporations paid as a percentage of the whole federal government's revenue. In 1943, it was almost 40%. It was like 39.8%. And it went down in the 30s, in the 50s, it was still 33%. And last year, it went down to 7.4%. That's the percentage of corporate contributions to the whole federal taxes, to the whole federal till. Theoretically, there's a corporate tax rate of about 35%.
Right.
But because of all the loopholes and the gaming, it's effectively about 12%. And
now,
here's the kicker.
Yeah.
The GAO, Government Accounting Office, just released 2 days ago, 60% of the biggest corporations paid no federal income taxes between 1996 and 2000 during the big economic boom.
Oh, during the 2 or 3 years before 2000, before the 2000 elections, under Bill Clinton. The list of corporations that not only paid no taxes but actually got tax refunds was just mind-boggling. I mean, General Electric, Enron. I don't have the list in front of me.
David K. Johnston estimates $200 to $300 billion of revenue lost because of corporate shenanigans and sort of shelters that have been created by the big accounting firms to help corporations avoid taxation. You got to wonder if they made any profits making widgets, or if it was all just tax avoidance.
Well, that's one issue, and one that's worthy of legitimate inquiry. The other is, though, there are those folks who say, well, if corporations are taxed, then they're not going to make jobs for us, and we won't have jobs anymore. But the flip side of that is that corporations are, and I own one, and I assume you're in business, so it's perhaps as a nonprofit, but you understand this stuff. Corporations are generating jobs, they're generating revenue, and they're doing it based on this infrastructure without which a corporation couldn't exist. I mean, if the Secretary of State here in Vermont didn't authorize me to incorporate, I couldn't do it. If I didn't have a court system that I could enforce contracts with the radio stations that we're on, I couldn't be in business in the radio business. I mean, it's just very straightforward. And I have no problem with my business, this business of this radio station, paying for that part of that commons that we're using. And yet, the conservative pitch line, we got about 30 seconds here left, Chuck, but the conservative line seems to be, no, they shouldn't pay for that. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's just, corporation. At the outset of the show, you listed some things, but corporations are using all of the services, all of the commons, all of the infrastructure that we as taxpayers have built together, as well as the common knowledge and institutions we've built, but they're not paying for it. And that's just the fundamental confusion. That wealth wouldn't be there if it weren't for the commonwealth that we've all built together.
Right. Amen. And that's now why perhaps the average CEO makes $155,769 a week. Anyway, Chuck Collins, thank you very much for being with us. Faireconomy.org, was it?
That's right.
Okay.
Good being with you, Tom.
Great. Thanks,
as
Chuck.
Always.
Keep up the great work.
You too.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. If elections play out as expected, for the first time in South Korean history, a national political party representing labor union interests will be represented in the Korean National Assembly. And the business community couldn't be more distraught, because their virtual monopoly over the political system is threatened by new election laws in which voters cast two ballots, one for a candidate and one for a political party. The Democratic Labor Party is predicted to win 5% of the 56 proportional parliamentary seats, possibly ushering in a new era of labor law reform.
Public transit in the Twin Cities may be rolling again this weekend after the city's transit agency and bus drivers union reached a tentative settlement in the early hours of Tuesday morning. This would end a strike over retirement benefits and affordable health insurance, which has idled buses in the Twin Cities for more than 6 weeks. Details of the agreement have not yet been released, although Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005's Executive Council is expected to recommend approval today. Picketing, however, will continue until the drivers have a chance to vote on the proposed new contract, which could happen as early as tomorrow.
The Los Angeles School Board, the nation's second largest district, unanimously passed a sweeping anti-sweatshop resolution. The procurement standard requires all companies producing the school system's $600 million in supplies, ranging from pencils to soccer balls, to disclose where, how, and under what conditions their products are made. The motion affects 746,000 students at more than 700 schools, marking a victory for activists, clergy, and immigrant workers who built support for the measure.
On the heels of Inglewood, California's referendum last week, which denied Walmart permission to build a supercenter in the suburb, the city of Los Angeles is resurrecting a proposed ordinance to ban supercenters there as well. The rule would forbid big box style stores of 100,000 square feet or more. A similar proposal a year ago was never enacted, but since then, a strike of tens of thousands of grocery store workers in California, precipitated in large part by the threat of Walmart's expansion in the state, has brought new energy to the issue.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Friday's job report from the Department of Labor showed a net gain of 308,000 new jobs in March. But according to investment advisor and ex-Fed official Lacey Hunt, of the 308,000 jobs created, 296,000 are temporary or part-time. Also, 4.9 million part-time workers say they would like to work full-time, and more than 23% of the unemployed have been jobless for over 6 months. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The United States now has a gross federal debt of $7 trillion. About 90% of which brought to you by Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. Works out to $24,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country. It's really remarkable when this ignores the promises, you know, Social Security, Medicare. You toss these in, we don't just owe $24,000 each, not just you and me, but our children as well. We owe $100,000 each. Because this excludes things like civilian and military retirement benefits, veterans' disability and medical care, environmental cleanup costs and contingencies associated with government agencies and government-sponsored entities. And now we got this huge debt, thanks to George Bush and his so-called tax cuts, his shifting of the taxes from basically you and me, from him and his friends, from the multimillionaires of America, onto the backs of you and me, the American middle class. Probably one of the last talk show hosts out there that can say that, I suppose. Anyway, it's this extraordinary shift has produced such a debt in the United States. Our government is so badly in debt that today in the Wall Street Journal, they reported the IMF and the OECD are flipped out about this. I'm going to share this with you in just a minute. I got a few other news things. In our second hour, by the way, we're going to be talking to a conservative who is convinced that and aggressively spreading the message, writing, speaking, that the liberal judges, the spread of liberal judges is going to lead to a banning of the Bible in the United States, among other things. Criminalize religion. That's what those Democrats are really up to. Should be an interesting second hour. And in our third hour, we're going to have the president of the Society for Indigenous People, Lauren Morritt, and a fascinating discussion about how the war on Iraq is actually a nuclear war. And in between, we got all kinds of news and clips and fascinating stuff and your calls. 1-866-889-8894. Philip in Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hey, Philip, what's up?
Hi. I got some breaking news for you.
Okay.
Mr. Limbaugh says he's a victim of selective prosecution for his doctor shopping of OxyContin.
Yeah, I've heard that, yes.
Okay, which they call hillbilly heroin.
Right.
That he's been taking for, what, 4 or 5 years? Well, I guess his high-priced attorney can't use that excuse anymore. Yesterday, TV reporter by the name of Mike Mason, he's a TV reporter for Channel 28, which is the ABC affiliate here in Tampa. He just went into the joint. He was busted for doing exactly the same thing, doctor shopping.
Oh, really?
And he is
for painkillers.
He is in jail as we speak, and he did it only for a year as opposed to Limbaugh that did it for a number of years.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to find something else to keep himself out of jail. This guy, who is a media figure, okay, he's a TV reporter, had his face on TV a couple times a day. He is now cooling his heels in jail.
Yeah,
we're doing exactly what Herr Limbaugh has been doing.
It's a very interesting situation, Philip. Here's
the future,
a little clip here.
My book, I Told You I Was Right and I Was Wrong, is due out shortly after I am. I really should be working on it right now rather than engaging you, my friends of the brain cell audience, but I have always respected you.
This is from when he was in rehab.
And given you the benefit of your own thoughts. And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s. we've got another caller. And I want to pay a tribute to the engineers here at the Betty Ford Institute for Advanced Nonlinear Studies for putting it through. Hello, you're on the AIB Network on Open Line Friday.
Rush, it's John Ashcroft, and it's Thursday.
Sir, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the call, but it is my hallucination, and that kind of obviates the conventional calendar approach.
Rush, I know you have a lot of time to fill, but mm-hmm. I've got detainees to sort. I just wanted to call up and say God wants his talent back.
There we go. It was just a little clip I thought you might appreciate, Philip.
One thing.
Okay. It's a parody, by the way. That was not really Mr. Limbaugh.
No kidding.
I'm assuming everybody figured out, but I better say for sure.
Yeah. You know, we on the left could get a hold of this Iraq issue by one creative thing. I would like to see the wealthy, like Barbara Streisand and others, get behind a movement to gather money, okay, for a wall in Washington, D.C., near the Vietnam Wall, to carve in the names of the people, the soldiers who have died in Iraq.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
This.
Can you imagine Bush saying, no, we're not going to do that?
This, yeah, I can't imagine that, and but yeah, it's that.
Wouldn't that be incredible?
I think it's a good start. I think, Philip, at this point, it's too raw, frankly. I mean, you know, I understand the politics of it. It would be good politics and all that, but I think right now it's just too raw. People are hurting around this, and it would be seen as being politicized. It's the country's going to have, we're going to have to get through this thing in Iraq, and frankly, I think, you know, it's. You have a situation in the Middle East in these Islamic countries where Islam has a whole different set of rules. Like they have different banking rules, for example. You can't charge interest. Banks don't charge interest there, and you know things are done differently under Sharia law, and even under countries that are not under Sharia law that are you know like Saudi Arabia that are you know well Saudi Arabia isn't a secular. I guess the only secular the main secular country was of course Iraq in that region. But in any case, I suspect that what we're going to end up doing and ultimately having to do is install a new strongman. You know,
this is what you know.
Or they're going to do it themselves. I mean, or you're going to have, if you actually have democracy, they're going to vote in another Ayatollah.
Right. But you are a historical person. I would like to see you devote some type of one of the shows to comparing what's going on in Iraq with Marshal Henri Philippe Pétain. You know who he was, right?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't. I'm sorry.
He was the French head of the Vichy government.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay. And that's essentially what we are establishing in Iraq.
Sure.
Vichy government.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, the Vichy government was the phony French government that the Nazis set up when they overran France and purported to be the official government of France. And of course, there was the French resistance against that. And De Gaulle came out of that and all that kind of stuff. And good point. Philip, I got to move on. Thanks for the call.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. 1-866-889-8894. Our number two international economic watchdogs warned that President Bush's budget plans will make the U.S. and other countries poorer in the long run. Poorer! This from the Wall Street Journal. It's amazing what you hear when you listen to the wealthy investor class talking to itself. The International Monetary Fund. So this is an article by Greg Ipp, IMF, OECDC, Economic Risk, and Bush's Budget, today's Wall Street Journal, said deficits will soak up limited savings, drive up interest rates, and crowding out investment, thus slowing growth. At the same time, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, this is a European organization, it's based in Paris, but it's not French, said taxes might have to rise to balance the budget. The OECD actually recommended that we drop our tax deduction for mortgage interest. This is the biggest, you know, that's the middle-class welfare program in the United States. Charitable donations, employer health insurance premiums. In other words, you know, if I buy health insurance myself, I have to pay taxes on the income before I can buy that health insurance. If my corporation buys it, then no problem. It's tax-free. And closing down corporate tax shelters. Yes, okay, that's a no-brainer. I suspect if we made mortgage interest non-deductible, you would have a disaster in the United States. But this is what they're suggesting because Bush has put us into such a hole, created such a mess with this absolutely voodoo economics. I mean, it's just, let's use his father's term, voodoo economics, and they go on to say, the IMF estimates that even if the budget deficit is cut in half from $521 billion, and by the way, we just got the first half of the year figures, and it was over $300 billion, which means it's going to be $600 billion. And that doesn't include Iraq, which is going to be another $100 billion, more or less. Anyhow, the IMF estimates that even if we cut this in half from $521 billion by 2009, as the Bush administration projects, U.S. gross domestic product would be 1.4% lower in 2020, 1.9% lower by 2050. That if surpluses had continued as had been expected in 2000, and for the entire world, GDP would be 2.6% lower by 2050. In other words, our children and our grandchildren are going to inherit a worse economy as a result of this tax shift that Bush did. He calls it a tax cut, where he borrowed money from our children and our grandchildren and gave it to his rich buddies and called it a tax cut and tossed, you know, $100 here and there to you and me to make us think that we had some play in this thing. The IMF warns the outcome could easily be far worse. It notes the Bush plan rests on, quote, somewhat optimistic assumptions, end quote. Yes, that's, for example, no costs beyond this year in Iraq, extreme restraint in spending, no change in the alternative minimum tax. All of these things are good. If those assumptions are proved wrong, writes the Wall Street Journal, this article by Greggett, and the budget deficit continue to current levels, U.S. GDP could be 2.7% lower by 2020. In other words, we are sinking into a hole, my friends, deeper and deeper, courtesy of the Bush administration. 1-866-889-8894 is our... Whoa, sorry about that. Hey, John, I thought we had a caller on the line. I must have missed him. Anyway, 1-866-889-8894 is our number if you'd like to call in. The IMF added that for many poor countries, the effects could be even worse as they pay even higher interest rates to compete with the U.S. for the world's spare savings. You get this? I mean, the consequence of this debt that Bush has run up is that it's, you know, it's making us poorer. It's also because we're going in debt. We have to borrow the money from somebody. We, the nation, you and me, it's done in our names. George Bush has borrowed $1 trillion in the last year. I mean, you know, projected out based on the actions that he took, it led to the borrowing or will lead to the borrowing of $1 trillion in your name and my name. Money that won't have to be paid back for 20 to 30 years. And boy, is it going to be a problem when that happens. You know, Jimmy Carter had his terrible inflation problem. That was the wringing out of the debt from the Vietnam War, which was really rather small deficit spending. But Johnson and Nixon both got into it, ran up the national debt. It still hadn't hit $1 trillion yet. We're at $7 trillion now, keep in mind. And then Ronald Reagan did his so-called tax cut and ran up another $2 trillion in debt. George Bush Sr. at least had enough fiscal responsibility to say, okay, I'm sorry, guys, we've got to raise taxes or this country's going to go down the tubes. His son apparently wasn't paying attention at Yale that day. So anyhow, John in Eureka is back on the line. Hey, John, if I hung up on you, I'm sorry there. What's up?
Hello, Tom?
Yeah, you're on the air, John.
Oh, this is Chuck in West Virginia.
Oh, I'm sorry. Louise hadn't... anyway, yeah, okay.
Anyway,
Chuck in West Virginia. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I got a funny little story for you. This is just make a lot of liberals laugh a little bit. A couple weeks ago, W flew out here to do a quick fundraiser in Huntington before he took a little vacation. And, well, he flew in West Virginia. They came out here scoping out places for him to come to do this fundraiser at, and he had a problem. He needed to be able to seat like over 2,000 people, and we have two civic centers in the state that can do that for the most part, you know, that hold several thousand people. Well, the only problem with that is is that they're both named after Robert C. Byrd because he's who got the money to actually do it, so they ended up having to go to a smaller theater that only held like 300 people.
Oh my!
And or maybe that's the money. So Robert Byrd actually got him in the back way because they couldn't get as many people in there as they wanted.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that.
Right.
It may have been, on the other hand, that you know they only wanted 300 people to show up because they're basically just inviting Republicans. Speaking of George Bush taking vacations, did you hear this testimony by George Tenet yesterday? This was shocking to me. This before the 9/11 Commission.
You're briefing the president from August 6th on.
I didn't see the president. I was not in briefings with him during this time. He was on vacation.
You didn't see
the
president between August 6th, 2001, and September.
Hang on. Yeah, maybe you missed that. I didn't see. This is George Tenet. He's being questioned by Tim Romer. He says, I didn't see the president because he was on vacation.
Time he was on vacation.
You didn't
I was
see
here.
The president between August 6th, 2001, and September 10th?
Before saw him after Labor Day, to be sure.
So you saw him September 4th?
No, didn't see him then either.
Meeting.
He was not at the principal's meeting.
He doesn't show. Yeah, he's on vacation.
Okay, I'm just confused.
Yeah.
You see him on August 6th with the PDB?
No, I do not, sir. I'm not there.
Okay, you're not. When do you see him in August?
I don't believe I do.
You don't see the President of the United States once in the month of August?
He's in Texas.
See, and here's Tenet. He's got his hair on fire. There's terrorists. But Bush is on vacation. He's on vacation. You don't disturb his vacation.
So who's briefing him on the PDBs?
Briefer himself. We have a presidential briefer.
Yeah, and my eyes bugged out, you know. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value, free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Are the Republicans going to be singing the blues? We'll see. We'll see. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 3 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, John in Westchester, New York, is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what prompted me to call was the report that you cited by the CEOD.
Yeah.
And, or CECD, actually.
OECD.
They're recommending that one of the ways we can get out of debt is to get rid of the mortgage tax deduction. Said, well, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I only have to look at myself and see that, you know, I'd basically not be able to afford my home.
That's right.
There's virtually no way.
Yeah, see, this is these. You know, the corporate taskmasters of the world. I mean, basically we have, what, 24 years of conservative policies have, including Bill Clinton, by the way. I mean, he's right, in my mind, he's right up at the top of the list of the people who participated in this by signing NAFTA and GATT. And I will never forgive him for that. We have basically just handed it all over to them and said, here you go. And you're seeing the absolute devastation of the middle class in the United States. And their response is not, well, gee, let's raise taxes on the rich or on corporations. No, their response is eliminate the home mortgage deduction for the middle class.
Yeah, well, you know, they haven't said it yet. And I sure hope that that our next president, John Kerry, doesn't even consider that. But,
yeah,
you know, I think the biggest reality is here, Tom, is that, you know, here we have the wealthiest groups on the face of the earth, the Fortune 500, that are paying, you know, fractions of what you and I are paying on our paltry incomes compared to theirs.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is the biggest abdication of responsibility. You know, even if you take the massive debt out of the equation, that's the biggest abdication of responsibility. And the only solution for that is to get these guys out of the pockets of our legislators.
Amen! And well said, John. We need to get the lobbyists out of the pockets of our legislators. We need
lobbyists?
To,
well, who pays them? The corporations.
Absolutely. And we need to then elect legislators who, you know, like Bernie Sanders will say to the lobbyists, get out of my office! Because he actually does. I mean, he throws them out. John, thanks a lot for the call. I do appreciate it. Thank you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush, breaking with decades of U.S. policy and outraging Palestinians, said Israel could keep part of the West Bank in a future peace deal that now appears more distant than ever. Bush coupled what Israel hailed as a historic statement on Wednesday with an endorsement of Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's unilateral Gaza pullout plan and a negation of any right to return of Palestinian refugees to what is now Israel. Sharon will fly home on Thursday armed with what he came to Washington for, U.S. guarantees he can flaunt in the face of opponents of his proposal to uproot all Gaza settlements and four of the 120 in the West Bank. Palestinian Prime Minister Ahmed Kouri immediately denounced the statement as unacceptable. Faced with rising violence in Iraq, the U.S. military plans to keep more than 20,000 troops from the 1st Armored Division and 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment there this summer beyond their promised year-long tours, defense officials said on Wednesday. The officials, who asked not to be identified, said final plans were being considered by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld based on a request from Army General John Abizaid, head of the U.S. Central Command with responsibility for Iraq. All U.S. troops in Iraq have been sent there under a promise to be brought home after a year. Democrat John Kerry faulted George W. Bush for a unilateral approach toward Iraq that has created greater dangers for the U.S. military, but the presidential candidate was heckled Wednesday for failing to back the immediate withdrawal of American forces. Kerry backed the 2002 congressional resolution authorizing the president to use force in Iraq, but since then has been harshly critical of Bush's foreign policy. During a question-and-answer session, a retired college professor accused Kerry of backing an imperialist policy in Iraq. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Veterinarians in Argentina said they treated a circus elephant for stress on Wednesday, saying the animal appeared depressed after spending several days away from her circus troupe. The elephant, named Mesri, is a leading attraction in a traveling show making appearances in the Argentine interior. Last week, Mesri was taken from the circus grounds after local authorities said a city ordinance prevented such animals from participating in public shows. Mesri soon showed signs of distress, authorities said, after being transported to El Recreo, a town 300 miles north of Buenos Aires. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Warning. Being a top corporate official at Tyco International can be hazardous to your health. Apparently, being an executive there triggers the greed gene, which grows out of control and totally engulfs any sense of personal and corporate propriety. For the past couple of years, we've watched the disgraceful spectacle of Dennis Kozlowski, Tyco's former CEO who lavished company-paid luxuries on himself while the company was tanking. In the last year of Kozlowski's regal reign, shareholders lost $80 billion, while Dennis wallowed in a $30 million Fifth Avenue apartment bought and furnished with Tyco money. His furnishings included a $6,000 shower curtain. Imagine, $6,000 for a shower curtain. Could you even let it get wet? But Dennis got ousted as well as indicted, and the new Tyco said that it would henceforth be a paragon of corporate virtue. To help put a bit of walk to that talk, some Tyco shareholders, led by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, offered two proposals at the corporation's annual meeting. The first was to bring Tyco home. Even though the company is physically located in the U.S., Kozlowski was one of those runaway CEOs who reincorporated in the notorious tax haven of Bermuda. This legalistic shell game lets Tyco escape paying millions of dollars it would otherwise owe in taxes. Money to pay for its share of the costs of our nation's infrastructure, military, and other benefits Tyco enjoys. Top executives of the new Tyco, however, sided with the ethics of the old Tyco, defeating the move to repatriate the company. The honcho's response to the second proposal was also very Kozlowskian. It called for a pay limit of $1 million a year for the chief executive. No, shouted the CEO as forcefully as possible, defeating the move and maintaining Tyco's old ethic of always take care of number one. This is Jim Hightower saying, in corporate world, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling?
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you, live coast to coast, border to border, all across America. Our liberal judges ruining America with their personal agendas? Is it possible? We have on the author of Wake Up America, Ralph Bauma. He has sued the Justice Department in a civil rights action for obstructing justice. And apparently something funky happened, something a little strange when you sued them, Ralph. What was that?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I sued the United States Department of Justice for obstructing justice.
And?
Because on three different occasions, U.S. attorneys asked permission to bring criminal charges against these judges for violating my civil rights. And because they adamantly refused to allow the U.S. attorneys to prosecute them under the civil rights statute, I sued the Department of Justice for obstructing justice.
I'm curious, what were your civil rights that were being obstructed?
Well, what happened is the judges were forbidding me to have my proper day in court. They were part of a conspiracy. According to an affidavit by the federal investigators, they said that the judges and the courts had become part of a criminal conspiracy. And this conspiracy amounted to judges boasting that they would give me a judge that would show me no sympathy. I mean, they...
What was the issue here, Fred? Ralph, I'm sorry. What was the issue?
Well, the issue was that I had a farm that the bank wanted, And when the bank decided that they should have that farm, they had their attorney attend a corporate meeting at the bank. And one of the people present told me that the attorney had asked, would you like to own Ralph Bauma's farm?
Okay.
And the question was asked, what legal basis is there to take Ralph Bauma's farm?
Yes.
And his answer was, candidly, there is none. That's not the issue. The issue is, do you want it?
So you sued them, and then what happened?
Well, when the Justice Department had been sued for obstructing justice, we got into the Ninth Circuit Court. And after I had filed my final brief, the two men from the United States Department of Justice had asked my wife's attorney, which was a civil rights expert, to have an appointment with them to meet pertaining to the case. So I consented. I was appearing attorney pro se, but me and this attorney, this civil rights expert, were doing everything jointly. And so they didn't want to talk to me. They wanted to talk to my wife's attorney. And he was Lynn Lund from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Right. Now, you say they offered a bribe of several million dollars?
Yes. What happened is when they came into the office and asked Mr. Lund, you know, Mr. Lund opened his drawers to start showing the crimes that had been committed, and they told him, they says, look, we've done our own investigation. We know that Ralph Bauma has enough probable cause to put at least 100 dignitaries in jail.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do it. We came to settle.
Okay. All right. Now Ralph, what does this have to do with your book, Wake Up America, and how judicial liberal judges are ruining America? And you say, for example, why leaving our judiciary unchecked will result in the Holy Bible being declared as hate material. I mean, what? I don't see the connection here.
Okay, I'd like to see that connection made this way. Today, we're seeing a Ninth Circuit Court ruling saying that they have to take God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. They're taking God out of everything, that out of the school. They're taking the Ten Commandments out of public view. And the end result is it's all part of a judicial conspiracy that has absolutely no jurisdiction. They have absolutely no judicial power to do these things. But because of this internal policy of the United States Department of Justice, that they're not allowed to prosecute judges for violating our civil rights, therefore these judges are emboldened to do these things.
Ralph, we're speaking with Ralph Bauma, the author of Wake Up America. Ralph, Ben Franklin, I think we all would agree, one of the founders of America,
right,
fled Boston when he was 16 or 17 years old. Specifically, I mean, in his autobiography, he wrote the reason he left was because he felt that the churches had so much power over the government in that community that he didn't want to have any part of it. He wrote in his autobiography, Toward the Mystery, and I quote, "I have found Christian dogma unintelligible. Early in life, I absented myself from Christian assemblies." Now, I'm quoting Franklin. I myself define myself as a Christian, so I'm in disagreement with Franklin on this. But nonetheless, here's one of our founders. Here's Thomas Jefferson. On February 1st, 1799, he writes in his personal diary, he says, "When the clergy addressed George Washington on his departure from the government, it was observed in their consultation that he had never on any occasion said a word to the public that showed a belief in the Christian religion, and they thought that he should so pen their address as to force him at length to declare publicly whether he was a Christian or not. They did so. However..." And this is Thomas Jefferson writing in his diary.
Okay.
"The old fox was too cunning for them. He answered every article of their addresses except that which he passed over without notice. Washington never did say a word on the subject in any public papers except in," I'm still quoting from Thomas Jefferson, "except in his valedictory letter to the governors of the states when he resigned his commission in the army, wherein he speaks of the benign influence of the Christian religion. I know that Governor Morris, who pretended to be in his secrets in Washington's confidence and believed himself to be so, has often told me that General George Washington believed no more in fundamental Christian system than he himself did," end quote. You've got the Treaty of Tripoli that John Adams worked out in 1797, which is still, I mean, as far as I know, it's still there. Quote, it opens, "As the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion," and goes on, you know, and it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of the Muslims, and it goes on to that. James Madison, on February 21st, 1811, vetoed the first attempt, the first federal attempt to put federal money into churches so that churches could care for the poor. It was the first faith-based initiative. President James Madison, and in his veto, he wrote to Congress, and this is, I'm quoting from Madison's veto message to Congress, I am vetoing this bill because the bill vests and said incorporated church an authority to provide for the support of the poor and the educated of the poor, which would be a precedent for giving to religious societies, and as such, a legal agency for carrying into effect a public and civil duty, which should not be conducted by, which, that's the end of his quote, he's essentially saying, and this is the government's job, not the church. The government should not be giving churches money. He was, you know, this was that wall. How can you suggest? Well, for example, the Ten Commandments. You say, you know, they want to take down the Ten Commandments. Do you think that we should have a law that says that there's only one God and you've got to worship Him above all others?
I do not believe that there should be a national religion. And I believe that this is what the American Civil Liberties Union is promoting, is to have a national liberal religion, which is atheistic humanism. And what they're doing is trying to impose atheistic humanism upon the nation as a national religion. And this is what my concern is, and this is what I believe is happening as a result of our judges being unbridled to make rulings totally contrary to the law, contrary to the Constitution, and what I'm concerned about is a fact of lawlessness that's enraging this country as a result of
this liberal secularism.
What they're doing.
Yeah, now I'm a liberal. I believe that our government should be secular, and I'm a Christian.
We have a lot of precedences that we see here from the United States Department of Health, Human Services, and child maltreatment. And it says that child abuse is up 2,300%
and you
1963.
Really, okay, and Ralph, Ralph Ruma, the author of Wake of America, you really believe that putting the Ten Commandments, that saying that in a court of law, that you cannot covet your neighbor's wife, or that you must obey your parents, or that only two of the Ten Commandments are part of the law of America.
The thing that I need to point out to you is that the Ten Commandments in the Scriptures is crystallized into two, and that is the commandment of love. In other words, love God with your heart, your soul, and your mind, which is the first four commandments. And love your neighbor as yourself, which is the next six.
And you think we should legislate?
And when we remove the law of love, now we wonder why we have so much violence and so much of this terrorism, and why we have so much bad attitude in this nation.
Okay, under the law of love of the Ten Commandments, if a woman was caught in adultery, not a man, of course, but if a woman was caught in adultery, she should be stoned to death. I take it you're in favor of reinstituting that?
I don't follow what your connection there.
Well, if you read the Bible, it says
right, very
clearly. It's in Leviticus and Deuteronomy,
right,
that and where the Ten Commandments are laid out, that if a woman is caught in adultery, she should be stoned to death. I mean, they do this, and they did it in Nigeria just last month, citing
okay,
the Koran.
Okay, you go into the New Testament.
No, the New Testament is not the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments come
from... Because they were dealing with the Ten Commandments when the Pharisee brought a woman that was taken in adultery, and they asked the Lord Jesus, what must we do? We stone her?
So then Jesus was saying we shouldn't have the Ten Commandments in our churches, in our courts, rather.
But what the Lord Jesus said, you who was without sin cast the first stone.
Yeah.
So what he's bringing forth is the law of love. And the Ten Commandments, when he was asked by a lawyer, what is your version of the Ten Commandments, his answer was to love God above all, to love God with your heart, your soul, and your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.
I think that's all wonderful, Ralph. I think it's wonderful. I believe that we should be teaching our children moral precepts, and that all the great religions of the world have these. However, for example, on February 10th in 1814, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to Dr. Thomas Cooper, and he said, finally, in answer to Fortescue Allen's question why the Ten Commandments should not now be a part of the common law of England, because there were people then saying the Ten Commandments should be part of the law of the United States, which is based on the common law of England. He says, we may say that they are not because they never were. He goes on to say that anybody who asserted that the Ten Commandments were the basis of American or British law, I'm quoting from Thomas Jefferson, was mistakenly believing a document that is a manifest forgery. He says, Sir Matthew Hale lays it down in these words, wrote Jefferson to Cooper, Christianity is part and parcel of the laws of England. And now, continuing to quote from Thomas Jefferson, but Christianity was not introduced till the 7th century, the conversion of the first Christian king of the Heptarchy having taken place around the year 598 and that of the last in 686. Here, then, was a space of 200 years during which the common law was in existence and Christianity no part of it. We might as well say that the Newtonian system of physics, of philosophy, is a part of the common law as that the Christian religion is. I'm quoting from Thomas Jefferson. In truth, the alliance between church and state in England has ever made their judges accomplices in the frauds of the clergy and even bolder than they are. I mean, he's saying essentially the opposite of what you're suggesting, and you're saying that this is what our founders wanted?
Let me ask you a question.
Okay, Ralph. Ralph. I'm going to have you ask the question right after this break. I'm sorry. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
You know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And then
here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card delinquency hit an all-time high at the end of 2003, according to the American Bankers Association. Nearly 4.5% of all U.S. credit card bills are a month or more past due. The ABA blames the situation squarely on the jobless recovery. Many Americans use their credit cards as stopgaps during times when money is tight. Couple that with the scarce job market and a rising rate of long-term unemployment, and conditions are ripe for rising delinquency.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Carlo Baggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We, the United States, have been through some things together. We've been through 227 years so far. We're still here. What are the foundations of this nation? What are the founding principles? What did the founders think about these things? Should there be a separation of church and state? Or should religion be part of our Christianity specifically, I'm assuming, be part of our national legal system? Ralph Bauma is suggesting that liberal judges are ruining America. Ralph, you wanted to respond to that point that I made before the break. Let me give you a chance.
Okay. You were quoting some of the older original founders of our nation, so let me quote a few. Let me quote Abraham Lincoln. And at the end of his Gettysburg Address, he says, quote, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to the cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, quote, under God, end of quote, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Yeah,
we also have a case from the highest court of our land, which is the United States Supreme Court, in 1892, where it says, our laws and our institutions must necessarily be based upon the teachings of the Redeemer of mankind. It is impossible that it should be otherwise, and in this sense and to this extent, our civilization and our institutions are emphatically Christian.
I'm assuming, Ralph, that you realize that in a Supreme Court decision that each one of the judges gets to write their own little ditties, and you can go through Supreme Court decisions and find just absolutely outrageous statements, particularly when they're in the minority, when they lose the case, but it's still part of the ruling.
Okay, well, let me conclude now.
Sure.
We got here also.
But with regard to Lincoln, let me just say, I thought, you know, I had memorized the Gettysburg Address when I was a kid. I thought it was brilliant. But just because Abraham Lincoln says one nation under God, does that mean
Let me finish.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
At the Constitutional Convention on June 28, 1787, Benjamin Franklin made this statement. We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and also I believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babylon.
Yeah,
Benjamin Franklin helped draft the Declaration of Independence.
And write the Constitution.
One of his signers.
And write the Constitution. And Ben Franklin, you know, really knew how to do his politics well, but he didn't put that into the law.
Let me finish reading.
Okay.
I'm taking all of this out of the encyclopedia, out of the World Book Encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Okay? During the signing of the ceremony to the Declaration of Independence, John Hancock warned his fellow delegates, we must be unanimous, there must be no pulling in different ways, we must all hang together. Yes, Franklin replied.
Or we shall hang separately.
We must indeed all hang together, or assuredly we'll all hang separately.
Declaring
a national day of prayer and fasting following the first Battle of the Bull Run, President Lincoln said, it is fit and becoming in all people at all times to acknowledge the government of God.
Ralph, yes. And Thomas Jefferson refused to declare a national day of prayer and fasting. So, you know, we can have dueling founding fathers if you want, but the reality is that the law of the land, the law of the land of the United States, was written and is designed to be not. I mean, these guys had lived through the Salem witch trials. They didn't remember the Inquisition from their own generation, but it was part of the history that they had all studied. They knew what happens when theocrats take charge. Let's take a couple callers here. 1-866-889-8894. Our phone number. Tom in Grand Rapids is on the line with a comment or question for you, Ralph. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, Tom. Ralph, how you doing today?
I'm doing.
Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition there, buddy, huh?
I'm sorry?
Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. That's what you sound like.
Tom, I'm going to have to ask you, we got a break here. Tom and Ralph, both of you, hang on, and we'll pick up this conversation on the other side. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. If elections play out as expected, for the first time in South Korean history, a national political party representing labor union interests will be represented in the Korean National Assembly. And the business community couldn't be more distraught, because their virtual monopoly over the political system is threatened by new election laws in which voters cast 2 ballots, one for a candidate and one for a political party. The Democratic Labor Party is predicted to win 5% of the 56 proportional parliamentary seats, possibly ushering in a new era of labor law reform.
Public transit in the Twin Cities may be rolling again this weekend after the city's transit agency and bus drivers union reached a tentative settlement in the early hours of Tuesday morning. This would end a strike over retirement benefits and affordable health insurance, which has idled buses in the Twin Cities for more than 6 weeks. Details of the agreement have not yet been released, although Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005's Executive Council is expected to recommend approval today. Picketing, however, will continue until the drivers have a chance to vote on the proposed new contract, which could happen as early as tomorrow.
The Los Angeles School Board, the nation's second largest district, unanimously passed a sweeping anti-sweatshop resolution. The procurement standard requires all companies producing the school system's $600 million in supplies, ranging from pencils to soccer balls, to disclose where, how, and under what conditions their products are made. The motion affects 746,000 students at more than 700 schools, marking a victory for activists, clergy, and immigrant workers who built support for the measure.
On the heels of Inglewood, California's referendum last week, which denied Walmart permission to build a supercenter in the suburb, the city of Los Angeles is resurrecting a proposed ordinance to ban supercenters there as well. The rule would forbid big box style stores of 100,000 square feet or more. A similar proposal a year ago was never enacted, but since then, a strike of tens of thousands of grocery store workers in California, precipitated in large part by the threat of Walmart's expansion in the state, has brought new energy to the issue.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Friday's job report from the Department of Labor showed a net gain of 308,000 new jobs in March. But according to investment advisor and ex-Fed official Lacey Hunt, of the 308,000 jobs created, 296,000 are temporary or part-time. Also, 4.9 million part-time workers say they would like to work full-time, and more than 23% of the unemployed have been jobless for over 6 months. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
We know you want more executions. You don't like our Constitution. You love to see your name in lights. You can't stand our Bill of Rights. There once was one you couldn't arrest. And you cover up her marble breast.
Oh, it's the Ballad of John Ashcroft.
And the good people of Missouri voted for a dead man.
Yeah. The Ballad of John Ashcroft. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 26 minutes before the hour. Thomas Jefferson, as in his diary, wrote about the writing of the First Amendment and what the debate was around the First Amendment. And he said in his diary, he said, "Whereas the preamble declared that coercion is a departure from the plan of the holy author of our religion, an amendment was proposed by inserting the word Jesus Christ, so it should read a departure from the plan of Jesus Christ, the holy author of our religion. The insertion was rejected by a great majority in proof that they meant to comprehend within the mantle of its protection the Jew and the Gentile, the Christian and the Mohammedan, the Hindu and infidel of every denomination," end quote. About the First Amendment. Ralph, you have issues with that.
You want me to respond?
Well,
I didn't follow you. Is that a question you were asking me to respond to?
Okay, no, it's not necessary. Let's take Tom from Grand Rapids and hear what his comment was. Tom, you're back on the air.
Hi, guys. I would just like to say that I'm all for keeping the church and the state separate. And I went through the school systems in the 50s, and I went through a Catholic school, and I went through the public school system. I found the public school system a lot better, basically because I got tired of hearing the same stuff over and over again, how God did this, God did that. And let's face it, the under God in the pledge was not in there before 1954. And so I think there was a lot more smarter people back in the old days. But I think a lot of atrocities have been committed across this planet in the name of religion. And, you know, Hitler had it.
The German army's belt buckle said, "In Gottes Namen," in God's name.
There you go. And I think the biggest problem with the planet right now, it's not the Ten Commandments, because, I mean, look at some of the stuff that's happened with priests and other preachers, even though they look at the Ten Commandments every day. I think the biggest problem with what's going on this planet right now is the overinfestation of humanity that the planet's trying to shake off its back.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Tom, thanks for the comment. Ralph,
can I
respond
to that?
Yeah, Adolf Hitler promoted what he called a Christianity, and aggressively, I mean, you know, look at the Holocaust. Isn't there a cautionary tale in there, Ralph?
You called me and asked me if I would be an interview. Now, let me speak.
Actually, you
offered
to.
Me.
Sure.
All right? We have an
article. Well, yes and no. I mean,
William,
you know,
Sapphire. Okay. He's a nationally syndicated columnist, and he had an article in our Great Falls Tribune here on January 5, 87, and the title of his comment was, "Atheistic Communism Has Failed, Has Proved a Total Failure."
Yeah, I agree with you, Ralph, and I'd rather hear from you than hear you quote Sapphire. I can read Sapphire anytime I want, but, you know, what do you think about this, Ralph? What do you think about
this? When you're talking, I haven't interrupted you.
Well, and I appreciate that, but you're welcome to interrupt me.
God places, he goes on as his headline, "God replaces vodka bottle." And then he goes on to show how that the communism had turned to be a God that failed. And then he goes on to show...
Ralph, because William Sapphire says something means nothing to me. I'm sorry.
Well,
William Sapphire is a right-wing crank who writes in the New York Times.
But what he's pointing out here is that President Nixon had also stated that the Christianity is what overthrew communism in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, and we all know that here. And we all know that Christianity survived through communism in the Soviet Union, but it's not what overthrew it. The Soviet Union wasn't overthrown; it fell under its own weight. Communism doesn't work. It was a disaster. It was
you
an absolute mess.
You called me to ask me to argue with you. You called and asked me to interview, and you're not letting me talk.
Actually, you solicited us, Ralph. Okay, you want to leave? Thank you very much. Ralph is gone, so we'll go to Rob in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm well. I'm sorry, Ralph. It's funny. You get these folks who, you know, I'm assuming that he was figuring that we were a right-wing talk show because they get this headline, how liberal judges are ruining America with their personal agendas. And, you know, judicial power is a threat to our religious liberty. You know, from the news release that this guy sends, I say, okay, fine, I'll put him on the air. And then he's like, well, anyway, I'm raving. Rob, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm ready to rave, too. I've been researching this lately. I really have come to believe that these right-wing religious fanatics are the biggest threat to the America we've come to know and love, that their main agenda is to kill public education because that teaches people to think independently. They want to put them either into homeschooling, that is religious homeschooling, that doesn't teach science or critical thinking, or they want to put them into religious schools. 99% of the voucher program kids end up in religious schools. And this approach that he seemed like a nice guy with a good heart, actually. He didn't seem like a mean person.
Is that Ralph that we were just talking to?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the vast majority of people who are sucked into this thing are good, decent people who really believe that religion is going to solve our problems. And at a personal level, I think for many people, religion does solve many problems, or spirituality, or however you want to define it. And for some people, it doesn't. But at the level of government, we need to be saying what people want to do in their bedrooms, what people want to do in their churches is their own business. It's not the business of government.
We've got an article on opednews.com now that's the number one forwarded article. It's been that way for over a week now. It's called George Bush and the Rise of Christian Fascism. It's written by Reverend Rich Lang. And this is what he's getting into. I mean, Bush uses religion as a kind of an asymmetric weapon.
Yeah.
I've been exploring.
Well, pandering like that. I mean, goes back to like he quoted Ben Franklin at the Constitutional Convention. I mean, Franklin, who openly, you know, in his autobiography, goes on and on and on about how he's not a Christian, never will be.
He's a deist.
He was, yeah, and then he cites Christianity at the, you know, pandering is something politicians have done for a long time, and you know, trying to bring people into the big tent. But still, I think we all need to realize that there is a point. You know, one of the most famous quotes that is quoted from Thomas Jefferson, and it's one that's brilliant. It's carved in the Jefferson Memorial, the monument in Washington D.C. He says, it's Thomas Jefferson, "For I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." Now,
great quote.
Okay, "I'm sworn on the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." Do you know, Rob, the context of that quote?
Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, most people cite that quote and they go, boy, that Jefferson, he must have been a real Bible thumper. He must have been a real believer. Well, he wrote a letter to Benjamin Rush 2 months before the election of 1800. He was running for president, against John Adams, basically. And he says, "Dear sir, I promised you a letter on Christianity, which I have not forgotten." He says, "I do not know that it would reconcile the genus irritable vatum, the angry poets, the who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on too interesting ground to be softened. The delusion on the clause of the Constitution, which while it secured," he's talking about the First Amendment, "which while it secured the freedom of the press, covered also the freedom of religion, had given to the clergy a very favorite hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity throughout the United States. And as every sect believed its own form to be the only true one, every one perhaps hoped for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and the Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country threatens abortion to their hopes, and the preachers believe that any portion of power confided to me, such as being elected president, will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe rightly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. But that is all they have to fear from me. But that, too, is enough in their opinion." Thomas Jefferson.
Go, Tom!
Thank you, Rob. But the point is that his "I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man" was explicitly saying, keep religion out of the state. That was the context of this thing. Rob, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for the great work you do with Op-Ed News. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's see here. Bob in Iowa. No, that's not Bob in Iowa. Sorry about that. Line one is Bob in Iowa. There we go. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, can you hear me?
I certainly can. You're live and on the air.
Hey, you guys did a great job in digging into history for examples to support the side that I agree with, you and the Christian Taliban member that was on there. We don't need to go to history. Look at Afghanistan. That's a prime example.
You want to see what happens when the religious folks take over a country? Look at Iran. Look at Afghanistan.
I mean, we don't need to talk about Thomas Jefferson and Lincoln and all these. I mean,
but I think it's important that we do, because I think that one of the things, there's a guy down in Texas, I'm forgetting his name right now, who publishes school textbooks and who's like a major advocate of America being, quote, a Christian nation, and he's actually made up quotes from the founders, and you find these things all over the right wing websites, and they're just and many of them are just made up, or they take things out of context, like this Jefferson quote. I so wanted to put this back into context because it has been so abused, and I think that it's important that people understand the history of this country, the ideals that this country was founded on, and the thinking of the founders.
I agree, and you know, these ideologues, look what happened. You put him in a position where he found himself defenseless, and what did he do? He turned around and ran. He couldn't stand it anymore.
Well, I think he felt that I was abusing him. I tend to interrupt people, and I'm sorry, but that's life.
You had a point to make, and you're fervent about it, and he was too, but he got where he couldn't defend it anymore. They're scary. They're frightening.
Yeah, I agree. Bob, thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome.
What was it, The Crucible? Was that the story that I'm remembering from high school, the play, the Henry Miller play, I think, about the Salem witch trial? I mean, you would think that we would learn. 1-866-889-8894. Patrick in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, good show. I believe The Crucible was by a Mailer, not Henry.
Oh, that's right, Norman Mailer, okay.
But terrific program, and this is a very important topic. I wanted to add something about the Ten Commandments because it came up earlier in your discussion with that guy.
Yes.
What people don't seem to realize, and I think it needs to be brought out as often as possible, is that most of the Ten Commandments have nothing to do with morality or ethics.
Right, the Ten Commandments.
There are only three of the commandments that have anything to do with morality. The one that says do not lie, the one that says do not kill, and the one that says
do not steal. Don't steal. Right.
Steal, lie, and kill. Those
and,
only
and then,
three.
And
all
the
other seven are nonsense related to how you believe in God, not related to morality.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them nonsense just by, you know, I think that anybody's religion deserves respect. But, absolutely, yeah. Our laws don't say that there's a single God that must be worshipped or that we're a monotheistic people. They don't ban graven images. They don't require us to take a day off work every week. They don't mandate that we honor our parents.
Right.
They don't
even
make it illegal to...
Moral. It's not moral to always honor your parents.
Right.
Suppose they're evil parents.
Right. Our laws don't make it illegal for you to covet another person's wife or sleep with an unmarried woman. And our
that's
laws
a thought crime.
And yeah, and not only that, our laws even don't make it a crime to lie. I mean, you've got Nike Corporation here last year arguing before the Supreme Court that as a corporation it had the right to lie.
All right, but I'm not talking about what is the law. I'm talking about morality now. It is immoral to lie in most cases. So I would think that that's okay, even though some laws allow it, as you say.
Yeah.
But in terms of morality, the seven out of the Ten Commandments are totally irrelevant. People who go around saying it should be shown in every court and school need to understand this and need to be told this every time they bring it up.
Yeah, it's well said. And a caller just called in and to share with us The Crucible was by Arthur Miller. So we both...
Oh, Arthur Miller.
There
oh,
you
I'm
go.
Sorry. We both had it wrong.
Yeah, there you go. But,
right.
we're moving along. Patrick, thank you very much for the call and thanks for your comments. 1-866-889-8894. What role should religion play in government? Thomas Jefferson, in a June 5, 1824 letter to Major John Cartwright, when folks were suggesting that the laws of the United States, the Constitution of the United States, were based on the Ten Commandments, he said, "Our revolution commenced on more favorable ground than the foundation of English or biblical law. It presented us an album on which we were free to write what we pleased. We had no occasion to search into musty records, to hunt up royal parchments, or to investigate the laws and institutions of a semi-barbarous ancestry. We appealed to those of nature and found them engraved on our hearts." 1-866-889-8894. Roberta in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roberta, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good to hear you again. Your reception isn't always so good up here. I think the point needs to be made, well, a couple of them, you know, I always have a few of those, that We were promised in our Constitution freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. And I certainly disagree.
I'm sorry, Roberta. We were promised freedom from oppression by religion, or oppression by kings, or oppression by corporations. Those being the three historic types of oppression. And the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence are quite clear. We don't want any of those three. We are ruling ourselves.
Yeah.
Maybe we're splitting hairs here.
Freedom of choice.
That's right.
Wouldn't you say is the inference there?
Sure.
So that would be freedom of religion and not freedom from religion. Certainly freedom from the oppression. Yeah, the witch trials were going on in Europe for years and years. You know, so many women have been burnt at the stake. Joan of Arc wasn't the first.
No, over a million women were put to death in Europe between the mid-1500s and the mid-1600s.
Gosh.
I'm sorry, between the mid-1400s and 15, between the 15th and 16th century, the center of the 15th and 16th centuries. Well documented by Leonard Schlein.
You know, if we have to live under, if it happens as we proceed with this electoral process, that democracy is the thing that doesn't work, if that is what the conclusion that we come to from this electronic manipulation that's probably been going on for decades, then I would prefer to live, if I have to live under a totalitarian republic, I would just as soon it be Plato's. Because it was Plato and Socrates who first brought the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm.
And well said, Roberta, very well said. I'm sorry I got to drop you off there, but time to take a break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value, free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
creating a greater sense of community might help control urban sprawl. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's a common scenario in many American cities. People move from decaying downtowns to suburbia, driving urban sprawl. Milenko Matanovic directs a nonprofit organization in Issaquah, Washington, called the Pomegranate Center. Part of the center's mission is to create a greater sense of community in urban centers to help keep people in the city.
If you make higher densities more livable, people feel less need to flee the cities and be part of the sprawl, which may be one of the main environmental problems we have.
Matanovic says some people move to the suburbs to get away from neighbors who are different. He says building hiking trails, parks, and town centers helps create a sense of community among diverse groups. In one housing project, he downsized individual lawns and created a central park instead.
We've been involved with a project on the east side of Seattle called Issaquah Highlands, and the developer wanted to create an urban village setting in what was traditionally a suburban area. And in talking with people who lived there, we realized that this park, this gathering place, makes a huge difference in the quality of their social lives. Because now, instead of people going to their backyards to walk their dogs, for example, or have their children play, by shrinking the backyards, they all come to the same place.
The gathering place includes play structures for kids and a cafe for adults. Matanovic says it all helps foster friendships and understanding between neighbors. He says by creating safe, usable community spaces, families will be less likely to move to the suburbs. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. It's the True People's Radio. Ralph Bauma's news release, the nerves of liberals will jangle as Ralph Bauma talks about the ways judicial activism and raw judicial power are subverting American justice and morality. Citing such hot button issues as allowing gay marriages and removing God from the Pledge of Allegiance and the Ten Commandments from the courtrooms, Bauma will say that liberal judges' personal philosophies have become the new standard of justice. The result, he says, is tyranny! You want to see tyranny? Go back to Salem, Massachusetts. 1670. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in North Carolina is on the line, one of our truckers listening on Sirius, I believe. John?
Yes, sir. I'm on the Sirius. First time I caught your show, but I've really been enjoying it.
Thank you.
I just have one little quick comment, if I might.
You may.
I always understood, and I'd appreciate if you comment about it. I always understood it that the government couldn't require you to be anywhere where there was being a prayer or there was going to be the Ten Commandments or whatever. Such as if you go to school and you're not there at 8 o'clock, they can put you in jail and your parents in jail for not being in school. If they chose to read a school prayer when you're not there and you're not required by law to be there, then that'd be just an option because you don't have to be there. Just as you don't have to be in court, if you don't have to show up for court, they can put anything in there I want because I don't have to go there. But as long as they legally require me to be there and legally require me to show up in court, or if they make me stand in front of a prayer and read it, that's where they have violated my rights.
Yeah,
that, they can put it anywhere they want to put it. And that's why I understood this, the United States Senate can have a chaplain, which is fine. They need a little religion up there.
John, you're half right. I just want to set this straight for you. It's not about whether or not you have to be there or you don't have to be there. It's about, because children are allowed to pray in school right now in the United States. It is perfectly legal for kids to pray in school. It's that the representatives of the state, because the teachers are employees of the state, the representatives of the state cannot lead it or enforce it. But they can allow it. I mean, kids are welcome to pray. So anyhow, just but
that's, see, they're not a representative of the state till they stamp their time card and they're on duty, so to speak. You know.
Yeah,
and
but then but you've got then the property of the state.
Of day.
Yeah, but the school is the property of the state too. I mean, you know, there's that issue. I mean, the whole point is just, you know, let's try and separate these things so we don't have a return to the Salem witch trials.
The schools and all, lots of those are multi-purpose.
Yeah, I got a boogie,
you know,
Dave.
You might have one thing that you.
Or John, I'm sorry, we're out of time. I appreciate your comments. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush, breaking with decades of U.S. policy and outraging Palestinians, said Israel could keep part of the West Bank in a future peace deal that now appears more distant than ever. Bush coupled what Israel hailed as a historic statement on Wednesday with an endorsement of Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's unilateral Gaza pullout plan and a negation of any right to return of Palestinian refugees to what is now Israel. Sharon will fly home on Thursday armed with what he came to Washington for, U.S. guarantees he can flaunt in the face of opponents of his proposal to uproot all Gaza settlements and four of the 120 in the West Bank. Palestinian Prime Minister Ahmed Kouri immediately denounced the statement as unacceptable. Faced with rising violence in Iraq, the U.S. military plans to keep more than 20,000 troops from the 1st Armored Division and 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment there this summer beyond their promised year-long tours, defense officials said on Wednesday. The officials, who asked not to be identified, said final plans were being considered by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld based on a request from Army General John Abizaid, head of the U.S. Central Command with responsibility for Iraq. All U.S. troops in Iraq have been sent there under a promise to be brought home after a year. Democrat John Kerry faulted George W. Bush for a unilateral approach toward Iraq that has created greater dangers for the U.S. military, but the presidential candidate was heckled Wednesday for failing to back the immediate withdrawal of American forces. Kerry backed the 2002 congressional resolution authorizing the president to use force in Iraq, but since then has been harshly critical of Bush's foreign policy. During a question-and-answer session, a retired college professor accused Kerry of backing an imperialist policy in Iraq. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Veterinarians in Argentina said they treated a circus elephant for stress on Wednesday, saying the animal appeared depressed after spending several days away from her circus troupe. The elephant, named Mesri, is a leading attraction in a traveling show making appearances in the Argentine interior. Last week, Mesri was taken from the circus grounds after local authorities said a city ordinance prevented such animals from participating in public shows. Mesri soon showed signs of distress, authorities said, after being transported to El Recreo, a town 300 miles north of Buenos Aires. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The offshoring of U.S. jobs is good for you. We know this is so because the powers that be keep telling us so. And they've never been wrong, have they? The latest assertion of offshoring absolutism comes from two peers of the economic establishment. First, let's hear from John Snow, the former CEO and corporate downsizer who is now George W.'s Treasury Secretary. Asked about the issue of corporations shipping out America's middle-class jobs, Snow was downright cheerful about the move. It's one aspect of trade, he said, and there can't be any doubt about the fact that trade makes the economy stronger. Can't be any doubt, John? You might check with some displaced workers about that. But Snow is way too busy cheerleading to talk to workers. You can outsource a lot of activities and get them done as well or better at a lower cost, he marveled. Excuse me, but perhaps it's time to outsource his activities. Then comes super techie Mark Andreessen to lecture us rubes. He's the former honcho of Netscape, who now runs an outfit that makes software to help CEOs offshore jobs. It's a hugely, hugely positive trend. Absolutely positive, he raves. Absolutely, Mark? One doesn't get the feeling that he's talked to many of the displaced either. But he's also way too busy for that, since he's now spreading his theoretical absolutism through a one-man media campaign to extol the joys of offshoring. By sending our jobs abroad, he says, those foreign workers will be able to buy Apple computers, Nike shoes, and other goodies from U.S. corporations. This is Jim Hightower saying, excuse me, Mark, but one, those workers are not being paid that well, and two, while those corporations have American names, they make their products abroad, too. Sorry to be so untheoretical here, but the grubby bottom line of offshoring is that big global investors get richer and the middle class gets stuck.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, one of the web's largest web-based radio stations, and with archives at White Rose Society. You can find links to all of that at tomhartman.com. Lauren Moray was formerly employed at the Lawrence Berkeley Radiation Laboratory in Berkeley, California, and the Lawrence Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab. Since walking out of her job to become a whistleblower at Livermore, she has devoted her time to the study of the effects of nuclear radiation. Her testimony at the International Criminal Tribunal for Afghanistan, held December 13th and 14th of last year in Tokyo, was largely responsible for the unanimous verdict on depleted uranium, and that President Bush and the United States are guilty of war crimes against the country of Afghanistan. Lauren, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, good morning. Thank you very much for inviting me to be on your program.
I'm pleased to have you. I said Moray, right?
Yes, that's okay.
For a moment there, I was thinking Monet, and you know, it's a. Anyway, thank you for being with us. Tell us about this testimony. I think a lot of people didn't know that there was an international criminal tribunal held in Tokyo in December of last year. What happened?
Well, it was really a very, very interesting experience, and it actually took place over a two-year period. For the first year, Japanese citizens, and this is probably over 1,000 were involved in organizing this, made 8 trips to Afghanistan. They interviewed the Afghan people about the war. They investigated bomb craters. They measured radiation levels.
Now, this was before our invasion of Afghanistan. I'm sorry. Okay, this is after the war in Afghanistan. Okay,
right. And they helped with aid programs, and they went to the refugee camps in Pakistan and interviewed Afghans. And then during the last year, they held 18 public hearings in different cities around Japan, one or two every month. And it was to invite witnesses and Afghan people and expert witnesses like myself, scientists, medical professionals, international humanitarian lawyers. There were 30 prosecutors from an international selection. They had 5 international judges on a panel.
And the point of all this was?
It was to record the true history of what happened in Afghanistan rather than let the victor, the United States, write the history the way they wanted it
and
to.
You're talking about the history with regard to the use of depleted uranium.
Oh, no, the war crimes and
oh, just the whole 9 yards.
That has happened in Afghanistan.
Yeah, okay. But specifically about depleted uranium.
That was a very big part of the trial, and the written opinion of the judges was very, very important because we can now send this to parliaments and governments around the world, as well as to use it to pressure for an international moratorium.
Now, this implies that our president has been indicted as a war criminal. Was this a body that has any legal jurisdiction?
They cannot arrest him. However, this is like the war crimes tribunal that...
In The Hague? The one in The Hague, though, is part of an international treaty system.
No, that's part of an international legal body, but because the United States has usurped any opportunity to be held accountable under international law.
Because we refused to sign the treaty.
That's right.
When Bush came into office, the so-called Kissinger exemption.
That's right.
Yeah, so that Henry Kissinger wouldn't be prosecuted. Okay, so we've dropped 2,200 tons of depleted uranium just on Iraq, you know, and there was
in 2003.
Yeah, and they're still using this right now in Fallujah.
Yes, they are. They're shooting it from Apache helicopters at civilians.
And not only the Iraqi civilians are being exposed to it, but also the American servicemen and women.
Absolutely, and people thousands of miles around, the whole region is contaminated.
What do Sergeant Hector Vega, Sergeant Ray Ramos, Sergeant Austin Matos, and Corporal Anthony Yanni have in common?
Well, they served in a military police unit in Iraq in an area called a town called Samawa, and they had served in other parts of Iraq. They were not in battle. They were for military police action and became very ill. They were medically evacuated from Iraq and returned to New York City, where they serve as policemen and firefighters and security guards. And they really tried to get medical help from the Pentagon and were refused, which is just a typical pattern since 1991. They went to the New York Daily News, and Juan Gonzalez, a wonderful, wonderful reporter there, convinced his newspaper to pay for urine tests for them to determine whether they were contaminated with depleted uranium, and the tests for at least three of them came out positive.
Yeah.
And what that means is all of them are contaminated. They couldn't all be sleeping and living in the same area and not all be contaminated.
Yeah. Now the Professor Yagasaki, the university in Okinawa, this was at the conference in Hamburg last October, Hamburg, Germany.
Yes.
Asserted that the radioactivity of the 2,200 tons or 440,000 pounds of depleted uranium that we've dropped. Well, it's over that now, but we initially dropped in Iraq. Now, is that in 91 or in this war, the combination of the two?
In 1991, it was about 335 or 340 tons. This is in addition, 2,200 tons in addition to the original amount.
Okay, and he added that to the roughly 1,000 tons that we dropped on Afghanistan, and he says it has the atomicity equivalent of how many Nagasaki bombs?
400,000 Nagasaki bombs. That means that the equivalent number of radioactive atoms released into the atmosphere since 1991 from the use of depleted uranium is equivalent to the number of radioactive atoms in 400,000 Nagasaki bombs.
Now, what the Pentagon and the defenders of the use of this kind of munitions say is, well, okay, where are all the victims then? If this stuff is so dangerous and so deadly, where are all the victims?
Yes, I know they're saying that, but we have out of the 700,000 veterans who returned from Gulf War I, 450,000 were exposed to depleted uranium, and out of that, 235 or 240,000 are on permanent medical disability. They're ill with radiation sickness from the depleted uranium.
How do we know that it's radiation sickness?
Well, it's also other toxic chemicals. The whole war was a very toxic war, but we know that hundreds of thousands of Iraqis are ill. Birth defects are increasing and becoming more and more severe. And cases of cancer and leukemia, and there are dozens of radiation-related illnesses besides cancer. So it's an overwhelming long-term impact on our soldiers and on the Iraqi citizens.
Now, the thing that I found interesting in this report that I read that you're quoted in here is that this stuff, I had operated on the assumption that depleted uranium, even when it oxidizes, even when it burns, and forms a gas and then dust ultimately, being uranium is a very heavy molecule or very heavy atom, that it would settle into the dust and eventually kind of work its way deeper and deeper in the soil and become less and less of a problem over time. But this report suggests that this stuff is being picked up by the wind and carried as much as 1,000 miles. It is contaminating areas as far west as Europe and as far east as India. What evidence is there of that?
Oh, well, I did my PhD research on atmospheric dust, and there are certain areas, for instance, the Sahara and the Middle East and the Taklamakan and Gobi Deserts in China, that are sources of huge dust storms that actually go all over the world.
Sure.
And so we know from the NASA data, NOAA data, you can go on their websites and see actual satellite photos of these huge dust storms just going all over the world.
Right, but does that mean that depleted uranium, which is heavier than your average dust, which is mostly just, minerals that are silicates, basically, that the uranium, I mean, that's twice as heavy, we're talking atomic weights of 50, 60, 70 versus, 238. that will transport these kinds of distances?
Yes, because when uranium burns, it's pyrophoric. It's a metal that will burn.
Right.
It actually oxidizes, which makes the particles much lighter and fluffier because the uranium has a lot of oxygen around it.
Uh-huh.
However, particles that are smaller than in the 1/10 micron range, which is 100 times smaller than a blood cell, are actually not, they're not subject to the laws of gravity. They're in a different physical world.
You mean sort of like dropping a feather versus dropping a bowling ball? Even
yes,
though gravity,
that's right.
Gravity affects both of them identically, the feather is going to come down slower. It has nothing to do with gravity. It has to do with the fact that it's more subject to the vagaries of the wind. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jack in Tucson is on the line. We've got about a minute and a half left here with Lauren. Jack, what's up?
Hi, Lauren. I'd like to know the source of 2,300 tons dropped in May 2003 in Iraq, because my understanding is that's based on speculations only, not any evidence from where it might be used, specifically in earth-penetrating warheads. And there's a couple of technical issues about that, as well as the, you know, credibility issue of claiming that so much has been used when it hasn't by any evidence that's been presented.
Okay, Lauren, is there? You know, where do your numbers come from?
I believe that number was presented by a number of witnesses, but I think the Pentagon admitted to that.
No, they have not. The Pentagon has only admitted to about 175 tons used in 2003 in Iraq and in ongoing operations.
Isn't 175 tons pretty amazing? I mean,
it is one ton.
Is,
but we're talking about a factor of 10.
Yeah.
And the more critical issue is the assertion that Ms. Moray has made. And believe me, I'm an anti-DEU activist because I live here in Tucson, Arizona, and the A-10s fly
Jack, I'm going to have to ask you to hold on for just a second,
okay.
And we'll keep Lauren on, and we'll give you a chance to get back to this, these statistics. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The White House wants yet another round of corporate tax cuts. It believes cutting the tax burden on business stimulates job growth. But historical analysis of U.S. federal tax rates and unemployment recently completed by the Brookings Institution shows no basis for the correlation. Look no further than the Reagan era. He cut taxes in 1981, and in the following 2 years, unemployment went up. Over the decade, taxation slowly rose again, and by 1989, the unemployment rate had fallen.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Lauren Morey of the formerly of Lawrence Berkeley Radiation Laboratory and Lawrence Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab, and currently president of Scientists for Indigenous People, City of Berkeley Environmental Commissioner, and past president of the Association for Women Geoscientists. If I have that right, Lauren?
Yes, you do.
Okay, and let's get Jack back on the line here. Jack, you were making a point.
Well, yeah, it's not that I favor depleted uranium at all. I think it should be banned because it's a crime. But the point is that these figures that result in an estimate that's a factor of 10 beyond what any evidence suggests was used in Iraq don't do the anti-depleted uranium weapons movement any good because they damage our credibility, and specifically Tomahawk cruise missiles. They're made here in Tucson by my neighbors. The conventional model does not employ depleted uranium, and I'm willing to, like, change that statement if evidence can be presented that, in fact, it does incorporate depleted uranium, but it doesn't, and yet Morey and others continue to say that it does.
Oh, that's the that was actually the decision of the tribunal, the amounts used.
The evidence presented to the tribunal, though, was an error. It was based on Dye Williams research, which was only based on the testimony of many experts. What?
It was not based on Dye Williams' testimony at all. He did not testify.
Oh, wait. But where is the expert source and what is their
source? You have to go to their website and investigate.
I have.
Yourself.
I've read their source, and none of their sources are well. And I guess the point, Lauren, is like with this concept of atomicity that perhaps you'll be talking about with Tom Hartman, it's not a fair understanding for the layperson of how radiation impacts biological systems to just talk about the number of atoms of depleted uranium.
Are you an expert on radiation?
Well, I certainly know that atomicity is not what you need to talk about when you're talking about the biological impact. You need to talk about disintegrations per second, which is becquerels. You need to talk about several other measurements that are not just
the
number of atoms.
Oh, we talked about that.
Well, what we're getting down to here, apparently, Jack and Lauren, is it's an interesting discussion, is that if anybody who wants to be, you know, if the anti-depleted uranium movement wants to really have an effect. I mean, I was, frankly, Lauren, my eyes bugged out when you said 400,000 Hiroshima bombs.
It's a pointless comparison.
Yeah, it's how can we more effectively, spread this message? Or frankly, Lauren, do you think that your message? I mean, do you see a problem with this?
I don't see any problem with it. I have it verified by other international scientists.
Yeah, but you said
I work with a group of international scientists. They're the top ones in the world. They're experts on radiation. It's an international group from scientists who work with the Chernobyl disaster, the Three Mile Island disaster.
But what do they base their estimates on, Lauren?
Yeah, it's
their estimates of what?
What do they base their estimates of 2,300 tons used on? My point is, if the skunk stinks, you don't need to spread shit on it to say that it's bad. We know that DU is bad. We don't need to exaggerate the amounts used to state
it's
our case.
It's not exaggerated.
Okay, Jack, I'm sorry. Pardon to my listeners. Please forgive Jack's language there. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Lauren, we got about a minute here. I want to let you wrap this thing up.
Well, I just think that the public is entitled to know that 10 times the amount of radiation has been released into the atmosphere than was released during atmospheric testing. And atmospheric testing had a terrible impact on global public health and the environment.
This is a real issue that we really need to be paying attention to. I mean, that's the bottom line. And what I hear Jack saying is he agrees that that's a real issue we need to pay attention to. And his perspective is, and yours are a little different on how these effects should be parsed out. But in any case, I thank you for bringing this to the public attention. I thank Jack also if he's really a DU activist working on this stuff. Lauren Moray, thank you very much for being with us on the program.
Thank you, and thank you so much for providing alternative media to the public.
You're
very
welcome.
Important.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. If elections play out as expected, for the first time in South Korean history, a national political party representing labor union interests will be represented in the Korean National Assembly. And the business community couldn't be more distraught, because their virtual monopoly over the political system is threatened by new election laws in which voters cast two ballots, one for a candidate and one for a political party. The Democratic Labor Party is predicted to win 5% of the 56 proportional parliamentary seats, possibly ushering in a new era of labor law reform.
Public transit in the Twin Cities may be rolling again this weekend after the city's transit agency and bus drivers union reached a tentative settlement in the early hours of Tuesday morning. This would end a strike over retirement benefits and affordable health insurance, which has idled buses in the Twin Cities for more than 6 weeks. Details of the agreement have not yet been released, although Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005's Executive Council is expected to recommend approval today. Picketing, however, will continue until the drivers have a chance to vote on the proposed new contract, which could happen as early as tomorrow.
The Los Angeles School Board, the nation's second largest district, unanimously passed a sweeping anti-sweatshop resolution. The procurement standard requires all companies producing the school system's $600 million in supplies, ranging from pencils to soccer balls, to disclose where, how, and under what conditions their products are made. The motion affects 746,000 students at more than 700 schools, marking a victory for activists, clergy, and immigrant workers who built support for the measure.
On the heels of Inglewood, California's referendum last week, which denied Walmart permission to build a supercenter in the suburb, the city of Los Angeles is resurrecting a proposed ordinance to ban supercenters there as well. The rule would forbid big box style stores of 100,000 square feet or more. A similar proposal a year ago was never enacted, but since then, a strike of tens of thousands of grocery store workers in California, precipitated in large part by the threat of Walmart's expansion in the state, has brought new energy to the issue.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Friday's job report from the Department of Labor showed a net gain of 308,000 new jobs in March. But according to investment advisor and ex-Fed official Lacey Hunt, of the 308,000 jobs created, 296,000 are temporary or part-time. Also, 4.9 million part-time workers say they would like to work full-time, and more than 23% of the unemployed have been jobless for over 6 months. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 26 minutes before the hour. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. I want to get back to George Bush's tax cuts here in just a moment, but Ben in Elgin, Illinois is on the line. I know, Ben, you wanted to talk about depleted uranium, I believe.
Yeah,
what's up?
There's a couple of things to note here. I don't claim to be an expert in depleted uranium. However, I do claim to have designed reactor safety systems and know a little bit about radiation, physiology in a exposure setting. The major problem with depleted uranium, the really big problem with depleted uranium, is that it is a organically available heavy metal.
Right. In other words, it's chemically toxic.
It
damages the kidneys and the nervous system.
Toxic.
Yeah, it's like lead in that regard.
It's worse than lead, and it's got a lot of there are a lot of things that it does to the body that lead does not do. It does not act directly like lead.
Right. Also, and when you shoot lead, when you shoot a bullet of lead or a shell of lead, the lead does not oxidize. It doesn't burn.
Right.
It doesn't vaporize. It, you know, some lead particles, of course, will. But by and large, most of the bullet is intact and fragments fly around. But they're fairly large. It doesn't get into the air where you inhale lead dust.
Right. But a depleted uranium penetrating round, when it strikes something hard enough, does in fact turn into a very fine dust that is then hot enough to oxidize very quickly. In other words, it burns.
Right.
Similar to what happens when a tungsten penetrating round strikes armor. Now, it's one thing to say you're using depleted uranium, and if you were truly using actually depleted uranium, you would be talking about uranium-238 and some uranium-233. In a metal, alloy with no other constituents.
Well, just even beyond that, I mean, isn't the phrase depleted uranium an oxymoron? I mean, truly depleted uranium is lead.
Well,
uranium radioactively decays down to become lead, and then it's inert.
It's
depleted of its radiation.
That's right. This is uranium which has been depleted of the U-235 that makes it usable in a bomb.
Right.
All right. And this is,
in other words,
this is just
U-238.
Mostly, it is done by gaseous diffusion systems.
Right, but it's just U-238. I mean, we might as well call it uranium-238 instead of uranium-235. It's correct. Just, it's just a form of uranium. There's several different atomic weights that uranium can have, depending on how many neutrons are the number of neutrons. Number of protons is stable until it starts to decay. Anyhow.
Now, here's the wild card.
Yeah.
The wild card is that in fact, this may not be pure U-238 we are dealing with here. For one thing, the enrichment process is not 100% efficient. There will still be some U-235 and some other constituents in there. And secondly, the depleted uranium we have been using to make munitions has been coming from dumps that we established, you know, starting with the Manhattan Project. And back in those days, they were none too careful about the kind of waste products they put into the furnace to make into ingots to put away.
In other words, this stuff could be contaminated with plutonium, americium, any of the other actinides and superactinides, the very, very heavy elements that in some cases are even more toxic than uranium.
Correct. It has not been assayed. As far as I've been able to determine, and I've asked a lot of people, they do not assay this stuff. They take the billets out of the waste dump, and they smelt it, and they make it directly into these cast uranium cores for these penetrators. They do not test it, and so we really don't know everything that's in it, and there could be a large number of short half-life, very dangerous radionuclides there.
Yeah. Yeah, this all the more reason for us to all be looking at this. I mean, you know, whether it's 2,400 tons or 500 tons or 1 ton. I mean, you know, dropping 1 ton of radioactive waste on another country, in my mind, is a crime.
It is a crime. And also remember, though, when you start looking at number of tons, uranium is about the heaviest thing you can name. It does not take all that many tank rounds to equal a ton.
Yeah, and well, lead is right up there also.
Uranium is about third heavier than lead.
Wow. Okay. Ben, thank you for the information.
Take care.
I appreciate it. Okay. Always good to have an informed person listening to the program and calling in. Thank you. Thank you, Ben. I do appreciate it. 22 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. The Center for American Progress has done some interesting, offered some interesting thoughts on the Bush administration tax. Today is April 15th. It's National Tax Day. Well, yeah, you can get a deferral and all that, but if you owe money, you better pay it today. And the Christian Science Monitor has an interesting article about this. They point out that there are a lot of what they call corporate inversions. Isn't this great? You ever heard of a corporate inversion? Sorry, you know, it sounds like something like the weather guy would be talking. Well, we've got this corporate inversion moving across New Jersey, heading for New York. It's a corporate inversion is when an American company like Halliburton or Enron, or, you know, so many on the list, an American company goes to the Bahamas, to the Cayman Islands, and hires a local attorney. Typically, the fee, from what I've seen and read, is, you know, $35,000 to $50,000, and then, you know, for initial thing, and then $20,000, $30,000 a year. Hire a local attorney who hires a local post office box. And then you pay some fees, you know, it might be $100,000, $200,000 a year, ultimately. And a lot of these little countries, this is their bread and butter. You get a couple thousand companies doing this. And they are now no longer American companies. They don't have to pay taxes. They have been inverted. Inverted from American companies to Cayman companies. And in fact, you know, Halliburton's Brown and Root division is one of them. And this is when the bill that, you know, John Kerry is criticized for not voting in favor of, the $87 billion to support our troops, which included 18 or 19 billion, more or less $20 billion for the rebuilding of Iraq in the first year. You'll recall, by the way, the Bush administration had said that we would get $20 to $30 billion a year in oil revenue from Iraq immediately. And it looks like it's running at an annual clip of around $7.8 billion. So, you know, you and I have to pay the balance. And when they came and the Bush administration came in and said, you know, we want to spend this money. And a number of Democrats and some Republicans to their credit, introduced attached a rider to that legislation, which said that if a corporation had gone offshore in order to avoid paying taxes in the United States, then the tax dollars of the United States could not go to that corporation. Now, doesn't that seem to make sense to you? That was fought from the White House itself. Dick Cheney and his hand puppet, Dick Cheney and George Bush, you have to respect the office. I'm sorry, I have so little personal respect for George Bush, but at some level, you know, he, anyway, that's a whole other topic. The Christian Science Monitors, these companies are doing this to avoid all taxes. On ABC News back on the 12th of July, reported that while President Bush, quote, says the Bermuda loophole should be closed, he has yet to support any of the bills that would do so, end quote. In fact, in 2001, the White House worked to strip out House-passed provisions. This actually passed the House of Representatives. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives actually passed this to strip out House-passed provisions barring federal contracts from going to the scores of U.S. companies that have used the scheme to avoid paying their fair share. The monitor sums up the situation by knowing that the growing, quote, burden on middle-income people and dearth, as in shortage, of corporate receipts raise issues of fairness. Issues of fairness. Gee. It goes beyond that. I'm sorry. It goes beyond fairness. It gets to the very heart of democracy. It gets to the very heart of when you have one group of folks in a nation who are using the commons, the collective stuff of all of us. They are using our roads. They are using the rights of way on which our telephone lines run and our internet cables run. And they're using our airwaves. And they're using our police. They want to be protected by the police department. They want to have the fire department show up if they get a fire. They want to be able to use the court system to enforce their contracts. If an employee steals from them, they want to be able to prosecute that person. They want to use our prison systems and throw that bum in jail if they get caught. They want to be able to have lobbyists in Washington, D.C. who can walk through the halls of Congress and knock on doors and pass out checks. They want to use the commons of America. They want their employees to drive to work on public streets. They want their employees to come in with an education. They want them to know how to read and write, and they want us to pay for it. When you have one group of people saying, well, that's all well and good, yes, but we're not going to pay for it. After all, it's our money, to quote various right-wing talk show hosts. It's your money. You don't want to give it to them, do you? When you have one group of people, corporate America, which is churning about two-thirds of all the money in America, the economy, paying only 7% of the tax, and yet they are using the commons absolutely as much as you and I. Keep in mind, corporate America paid 43% of our taxes in the 1940s, and now they're paying 7%. Welcome to the wonderful world of Reaganomics and Bushonomics, conservative economics. Alan Greenspan, the great libertarian, the devotee of Ayn Rand, initiated into the cult of libertarianism in her apartment in New York City back in the 50s or the 60s. Alan Greenspan is on record as saying that he thinks that corporations should pay no income tax. After all, their employees get taxed. So the taxes get paid. That's the direction we're moving. I think it's important to remember that on this tax day. 1-866-889-8894 if you have thoughts on this. Country club millionaires complain about hardships. The data is clear. The top 1% of Americans who make an average of $1 million a year will receive more than $1 trillion in total tax breaks this year from George Bush's so-called tax cut. Paul in Upland, California. Hey, Paul. Hey, Paul, what do you think of that?
I'm not sure where the greed stops. Because obviously, if these tax breaks have been going on for 2 years or whatnot, when is there actually going to be a point where those who are in corporate America decide, or corporate, Cayman or whatever, when will they finally decide, wait, we've got enough money, that's okay, let's not fight that anymore.
It's never going to stop, Paul. It's never going to stop. There are very rational, educated, thoughtful, articulate spokespeople on the right in corporate America and in the conservative movement by and large. Not all of corporate America are bad guys. There's a lot of good corporations out there and a lot of good people in corporations and a lot of corporations who are actually paying their taxes, and particularly the small and medium-sized ones. But the bottom line is that you've got entire institutions, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, we've had a couple of their people here on this program, who are suggesting that here's where it should stop, that if you earn your income from investments, mm-hmm. you should pay no taxes. And if you are a corporation, you should pay no taxes. And let the government be funded by taxes on wages of working people, period. And they're right up front about it. I mean, it just boggles my mind that the American people are not listening to these people who are saying this stuff all the time. They write op-ed pieces in the Wall Street Journal at least every couple months about this. It just goes on and on. Paul, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I'm going to move along here. 1-866-889-8894. Trevor in Ogden, Utah is on the line. Hey, Trevor, what's up?
Not too much. I was just listening to the show, thinking about the recent Bush tax cuts. And I read the other day, they listed Bush and Cheney released their returns.
Yes.
I just thought it was interesting that Cheney this year paid 9% less in taxes, went from 29% to 20%.
Well, the other thing that was amazing is that Cheney received $179,000 or $187,000 from Halliburton this year. I mean, can you imagine if Bill Clinton had gotten money from a Whitewater land deal while he was president?
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
It's more than pretty ridiculous. I think it's criminal. I mean,
they're on record stating that Cheney is not receiving any income from Halliburton and
look,
the recent oil contracts.
Yeah, and look at his tax receipts and look at his stock options, which are going up in value every single day as Halliburton makes more and more money.
And as oil prices and gas prices are driven up.
There you go. Yep. Trevor, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour, exposing the con in conservative. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Congress. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A Seattle area urban designer creates community spaces that blend with the environment. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Milenko Matanovic designs gathering spaces and parks for communities around Seattle, Washington. His aim is to make shelters, benches, and other structures blend with their surroundings.
The design needs to rise out of the space, out of the natural conditions, rather than be imposed onto them. And so we're very concerned with creating metaphors that both reflect the natural condition of the land, but also the human condition of the community.
Matanovic directs the Pomegranate Center, a nonprofit organization that designs community spaces. He uses materials found in the original landscape, like rocks and trees, to create environmentally friendly gathering places. And in a recent project done in Tacoma, Washington, Matanovic salvaged materials from historical parts of the city. He created a venue for performances and gatherings. The construction was done by local volunteers,
who created this extraordinary series of shelters inlaid with copper that we salvaged from the old Union Station in Tacoma. And we utilized cobblestones from the old streets of Tacoma and granite curb stones that used to define sidewalks. And we were able to use them to design this pretty extraordinary gathering circle and three linked shelters that serve as focal points for the community.
Matanovic says it's important to make gathering places that fit the native landscape, but he says the project must also accommodate the needs of a community. To see photos of Matanovic's work, visit his website. It's pomegranate.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I got a friend named Whiskey Sam. He was my boony rat buddy for a year and now. He said, I think my country got a little off track. Took him 25 years to welcome me back. But it's better than not coming back at all. Many a good man I saw fall. And even now, every time I dream, I hear the men and the monkeys in the jungle scream. Drive on, it don't mean nothing. My children love me, but they don't understand. And I got a woman who knows her man. Drive on,
Johnny Cash. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. George Tennant, just one quick here. We'll push the wrong button. Okay, let's instead of that, let's 1-866-889-8894. Alan in Knoxville, Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Alan, you're listening on Sirius Radio.
Yes, there's a lot of trucks out here hauling goods for Walmart.
Yes, sir.
and they're tearing up the nation's highways. And I was wondering, how much taxes is the Walmart Corporation paying, and how much taxes is the descendants of Sam Walton is paying on these roads?
Well, we know that the descendants of Sam Walton, who make their living sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to show up, are not making payroll. They're not paying payroll taxes like you and I do on salaries or on income. On the first 87 or 81,000 or whatever it is, the first little less than 90,000. They're not paying payroll taxes. They're not paying into Social Security or Medicare. And they're paying a maximum under the new Bush tax cut of last year. They're paying a maximum of 15% income tax on their capital gains and dividends. So we know that. As far as how much Walmart is paying in general, I frankly don't know. Corporate America in general is paying about 7%.
Okay. That sounds pitiful.
Yeah, it does sound pitiful, doesn't it, Alan? And it's one of the reasons why our roads are so bad. I mean, it's one of the reasons why you've got governments all over the country that are just freaked out trying to figure out how that they can pay the bills. How can they make their schools work? How can they get their streets working? How can they, you know, why have we had 100,000 cops laid off in the last 3 years? It's there you go. They're not paying.
Yeah, people have to quit putting so much onto the common man like us.
That's right. Well, that's their plan. That's conservative economics. Dump it on us, save the rich from, you know, the drill. Alan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to our sponsors, and thank you for listening. Join us tomorrow, same time, same place.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.